We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Roto Grinders, NFL food for thought. We're back another week in the books, closing the door on week 14, and we're heading right into week 15. I'm the Looch. I'm here with the Chief, Will Priester. We might have to tuck our tail between our legs and talk about the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, tell me about it. We'll get there. Once again, man, you know, the NFL full of controversy, and things can be flipped on its ugly head fairly quickly. So it's going to be an interesting pod. I'm tapering my excitement a bit until we get into the meat and potatoes of this thing. But what a week of football. You know, I think the overarching thing for me is we saw some teams this week that, in my opinion, had to have it, and they didn't go get it. And wow, like that's to me that's the overarching theme, and I feel like that's been the theme of the season, Luch. Right? Like every week we have these spots where a team has to have it. It's like this: you got to get this game. And they just it just does not materialize. And so it's going to be interesting. And I think we've seen, I mean, once again, like I said, the whole weekend. Obviously, a lot of good teams won football games, but a lot of other teams, and I'm talking about the have-to-have-it teams, didn't do what they were supposed to do to put a tick mark in the W column. And it's going to screw up their season.
Yeah. One team that did was the Bills. And the Jets played them tough, and it was a pretty ugly AFC East divisional game. And that's one of my elephants in the room, is that the Jets can hang. The Jets can hang. Mike White's not perfect, but he's something, right? So he's a leg up from whatever Zach Wilson offered. And the Jets can hang. I mean, they need some variance to probably go on a little bit of a run if they get in. But, you know, my takeaway is the Bills are winning ugly football games. You know, they're finding ways to win. if this was a 500 team, a darling team, if the Bills were the Detroit Lions, everyone would be saying, well, they're just finding ways to win, and they wouldn't be nitpicking on just putting 20 points against the Jets. So I think the Bills are doing what they have to do, discovering this run game a little bit of balance. The defense is, you know, a little bit healthier with Tre'Davious White back in the fold. So those are kind of my takeaways from that game, is that it was competitive. It was competitive. The Jets are real close to being a dangerous football team. I don't know if it'll happen this year. It could happen in the next year and a half, Chief, if they keep these pieces together, the young skill players on offense, whoever the answer is at quarterback, a good young head coach, defensive-minded head coach who's not afraid to make bold decisions, and Robert Saleh, clearly, and a really nice front seven with Sauce Gardner on the back end of that defense as well. So that was just a good divisional football game, and you know, I was impressed with the way the Bills figure out how to win, even though it was ugly, and the Jets kind of hang in there and kind of left a few on the table. They took the Vikings down to the wire 2 weeks ago. Ball in hand, final drive inside the 10. You know, one score game against Buffalo. You can't knock the Jets right now, and I still kind of like them as the season winds down.
Yeah, I do still like the Jets. Because, see, here's the thing. The Jets are still a fairly young team with a fairly young head coach. And so I think for young teams, at least for me, Luch, one, are you being competitive? And two, do you have a chance to win late, right? And I think what we saw, though, was the Bills' experience is carrying them through a lot of these close games right now, I think. And we saw their defense get off a little bit against Mike White. But once again, the weather conditions, Luch, kind of held both teams back a bit until Mike White, once again, they kind of had to start pushing it down the field. And if you look at the yardage totals, he was able to get it done. They just couldn't put a W in the win column. I was encouraged to see, you know, what we saw from them. Are we good? Are we good to switch gears on this game? Or are we good? So another team that I felt like had to have it. We're going to set the Vikings aside. We'll get to them later. The Seattle Seahawks had to have it. I don't understand what happened here. The Panthers, look, I'm a Panthers fan, right? The Panthers put up 30 points, Luch. 30. And you would have thought that Sam Darnold possibly lit the world on fire with us scoring 30 points. He was 14 to 24, 120 yards and a touchdown. Deontay Foreman, 21 carries for 74 yards. Chuba Hubbard, 14 for 74 and a touchdown. Raheem Blackshear, 4 for 32 and a touchdown. Sam Darnold, 4 carries for 30 yards and a touchdown. Like, DJ Moore did not record a pass in this game, and we scored 30 points. I mean, of course, there were some defensive miscues, obviously. My point is, Geno put up 264 and 3 touchdowns, and we beat them by 6. Like, to me, this was a had-to-have-it game for the Seahawks. Now, is it probably going to screw up their wild card chances? They keep losing and Detroit keeps winning. It just might. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, this they needed to win this game, and they let the Panthers come into town, a 5-8 football team now, and now the Seattle Seahawks are 7-6, and they just let a game slip away. Any thoughts on this Seattle game, how it went down? I mean, this was – and I'm a Panthers fan. Like, I'm tired of us winning these stupid games. We're not going to the playoffs. And look, a win's a win. But, man, I felt like the Seattle Seahawks had to have this game.
I think Seattle's one of those teams that's talented in some areas and flawed in others. They're a team that could get in, do damage, would need some volatility, would need the right matchups. We've seen them have some ceiling games. And we've seen them play really inconsistently as well because of some of the flaws on the roster. Seattle's just one of those teams. They aren't wowing you as Super Bowl contenders, but if they made a run, it would be cool, and it's plausible. Like, Seattle's one of those teams that could make a run, and they're kind of above average, and if they get hot at the right time, who knows what could happen. I think there's a bunch of teams in that fold teams that don't seem like complete contenders. You have Philly, you have Buffalo, you have Kansas City, and I think you need to put Cincinnati on that list now because they're good enough on both sides of the ball that I think Cincinnati can make some noise as well. But I kind of – and you know what? I guess Dallas too. But I think you throw –
yeah, I think you have to keep them in there. I know it was an ugly win on Sunday, but at the end of the day – I mean, this team is what, 10-2, 10-3? 10-3. Look, man.
A win's a win, right? Just like we talked about last week.
What's that?
A win's a win, like we talked about last week.
In the NFL, it is. Like, even the worst team. Like, the Texans are one of the worst teams in the NFL, and this was a 4-point football game. Like, that's what we were talking about last week. Like, the difference between the best team in the league and the worst team in the league isn't as bad as people think. Now, the Eagles just got off against the Giants, but, you know, all in all, and I'm bringing this up for a point, Chiefs-Broncos, 34-28. Broncos have been anemic on offense all season. And we're able to put up 28 points this weekend. Like, as bad as they have been, this ended up being – and they had a chance to take the lead late. Just didn't capitalize.
Yeah. I'm okay with Dallas squeaking one out. But to circle back to your question, I think Seattle is just one of those pretty competitive teams that, you know, if they click at the right time, they could make a run. I think you got to throw teams like Tennessee in that mix. I think you got to throw the Jets in that kind of realm. You know, listen, let's go to the Titans real quick, because what loses your football games? Turnovers, four of them to the Jags. The Jags are back in the AFC South race. And how precious is offensive line play? And we don't talk about it enough. Nobody talks about offensive line. It's all you hear about at the high school level. And then, you know, everything gets all skill player-y, sexy skill players in college and the NFL. But all the injuries Tennessee has had on the offensive line is why Derrick Henry has kind of been broken in the second half. I mean, he had 100-plus yards against the Jags. Really nice first half. The pass game's been in shambles. But offensive line is so critical. Losing Taylor Lewan was a big deal to this offensive line. If you have one missing link on an offensive line, it could derail an entire offense, Chief. I mean, have you seen that?
Your entire season.
That's exactly what we're seeing. I hopped on here a couple weeks ago and said Dennis Daly was the worst football player I've ever seen. I stand by that. He is so, so incredibly bad at football. That it's just even hard to fathom that there's not a better replacement. And it's kind of sad. And Tennessee has been beat up for sure. And they've been missing a ton of guys again. But I still think we saw the Eagles dismantle the Tennessee offensive line. And it was solely due to Dennis Daly. One guy on an offensive line on the blind side can really just derail an entire season. So a lot of these 500 teams have a couple of flaws that will get exposed in the right matchups, in the right ways, and we've been seeing that. So kudos to the Jags getting it done. The Titans' flaws definitely shown, and it's up front on the offensive line. And that's not the Titans' brand of football. And when, you know, Mike Vrabel doesn't have this identity for Tennessee to be able to be the more physical football team, it could get ugly fast. So we'll see if they can clean up some stuff and get rid of Dennis Daly and move some personnel around. Any thoughts on the Jaguars and Evan Engram breaking daily fantasy football slates or anything with that one?
Well, I think, you know, what we had talked about was, and we talked about at the beginning of the season, Luch, and so I always like it when kind of we talk about things, but the Jaguars are coming, right? And I think we're starting to see it, you know, and we knew they were coming. They're a young team. They were playing teams tough. But your teams typically don't know how – they have to learn how to finish games. You know what I mean? And they didn't have to finish this game, obviously. They were in control. But my point is, you know, some of these games they lost, like they just kind of they're young, but as they continue to progress and get better, I think you're going to start seeing these types of things out of them. You know, as especially as their offense can continue to progress, if Trevor Lawrence continues to get better, this team should be able to put up points in the 20s most weeks. If you can do that in the NFL, like Luch, if you can average about 24 points in the NFL a game, you're going to win a lot of games, right? Like that's, you know, in the NFL, you're averaging 24 points. You're pretty much scoring because, you know, some of those games might be in the 30s, some might be 17, 18 that you win. But this offense is coming along. Like if you look at, you know, just this weekend, like Trevor put up over 300 yards passing. And the running game did nothing. Like that's what was, I think, a shocker to me, which I didn't expect Travis Etienne to get off because we know about the defense of the Titans in terms of the run game. But Trevor Lawrence still threw for 368. It's not like he threw for like 220, 250. He threw for 368. Like, huge game. Definitely something was going on with him and Evan Engram this game. Had to be a matchup issue, something they saw. You know what I mean? Something they saw on tape that said, okay, this is a matchup we can take advantage of. Zay Jones continues to just catch footballs and put up numbers. Marvin Jones doesn't have to do anything anymore unless it's, you know, some miracle play. And Christian Kirk is being very serviceable every game. So, I mean, they pretty much laid the hammer down on the Titans, and they're 5-8, and the Titans are 7-6. And God forbid the Titans lose again. I mean, the Jaguars, if they continue to win, both these teams could, gosh.
Week 18, they play each other. It could be for the division.
That's what I'm saying. It's
here's the thing. Tennessee is so banged up that they really need to somehow pull out another win or two and load manage. Jeff Simmons has been playing on one foot the entire second half. That's why no one's talking about him anymore, and he commands the second most double teams in the NFL. Tennessee was without Christian Fulton, without David Long, without Zach Cunningham, without Trey Avery, without Danico Autry, which is five starters right there, and it showed on paper. So they are severely banged up, which opened the door for a huge day for the Jags to do their thing. This is how bad Dennis Daly is at football, left tackle. He's allowed the most sacks than any other offensive lineman in the league, and the second most pressures. And there's 110 more offensive linemen who have played more pass snaps than him. So not only is he giving up the most sacks in the league and the second most pressures, he's 111th on the list in how often he's been on the field. And this guy's in the NFL. And you know what? I bet you Ryan Tannehill doesn't sleep at night knowing that guy's protecting his blind side, not Taylor Lewan. If you don't have more than a second in the pocket, how are you supposed to open up the offense? You just cannot do it. Can't do it.
And Derrick Henry actually had a good game this week.
He did. On paper. Yep. Four turnovers, too. You don't win in the NFL with four turnovers. Got it.
Yeah, you can't.
You don't.
You can't.
You don't. And that was pretty uncharacteristic of Tennessee. If they, you know, they don't score a ton of points, but they typically do take care of the football. So that was a bad time to play uncharacteristic football. And here come the Jags, and we got a fun race in the AFC South. Eagles laying the hammer down. What was your takeaway from this game? Blowing out the Giants. Let me hear.
They're running away with this division. If they beat Dallas, then they're pretty much guaranteed, I think, the one seed. Because I don't think Washington would beat them again. You get what I'm saying? Like, I don't see that happening. 48-22, that's a big number. And they beat them convincingly. I think the Eagles had seven sacks in that game, for what it's worth. Seven. Daniel Jones didn't play, I think, most of the fourth quarter. Like, this was a division beatdown. And so, 48 points in the NFL, that's a whole lot. Like 27 is a lot of points in the NFL. 48? I mean, it was a convincing win. And, you know, they just keep doing their thing, man. Props to the Eagles and what they've been able to accomplish this season. I don't have much to say outside of, you know, fly, Eagles, fly. They're rolling.
When you win the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, piggybacking off our last conversation, everything else comes a lot easier. And then you add AJ Brown on the other side of Devontae Smith. You got the Batman and Robin thing on the outside with time in the pocket and a quarterback who can move and a capable running back in Miles Sanders. I mean, welcome to the new greatest show on turf, grass, whatever they play on at the link. I don't even know. Is this offense more dangerous than the Bills? Is this offense more dangerous than Kansas City? I think the answer is yes. I think it is.
Well, I agree with you. I think it's because of the amount of this offense is potent in a different way. And here's what I mean by that. So not only can they beat you in the run game, they'll beat you in the quarterback run game. So you get what I'm saying here? So, yeah, Miles Sanders can do a few things. He can put together a few special runs. But then when they get the quarterback run game going, and I'm talking about the intentional quarterback run game loops. I'm not talking about the off-script stuff. I'm talking about intentional quarterback draw, intentional quarterback power, intentional RPO quarterback design runs. You get it? Because they have all that in their offense. Like, you know, I was watching some film breakdown on how they run this, and you've got all the moving parts, right? And if and so Jalen Hurts, sometimes he's reading second level, where he so you know, in the traditional RPO game, a lot of times they would just read the defensive end. Right, if he's crashing in, he'll pull it. He'll get outside. But now they've got guards pulling and doing other things. And so instead of him reading outside, he's reading inside. And so it's like, okay, if you see that your lineman is going to be able to pick up this linebacker as we're crashing down, you just keep it and follow him. And the running back almost becomes a lead blocker. That's what I'm saying. They've got this thing schemed up to a T, man. And It's a really interesting thing to watch. And then now when you add that wrinkle, it opens it up for AJ Brown. It opens it up for Devontae Smith, right? If and another thing, I think another statistic, I don't want to say a statistic, but another part of his film breakdown. By the way, if you guys don't watch, I like listening to The Herd with Colin Herd, because he has a guy that comes on from NFL Films and just breaks down film, like on his show, and talks about different players of the week. So it's really cool. And but what he's been doing also, Luch, if he gets one-on-one coverage on the outside now, he's taking it. He's taking the shot almost every time, which is crazy, right? For a guy that, you know, maybe had some deep ball issues, maybe wasn't, you know, touted as the best passer in the world. Like, he's pushing the ball downfield, and he's putting it in some window. Like, not only is he pushing it, he's not just throwing a wide open guy. Like in the Steelers game, right? We saw him put it between two defenders. And yeah, AJ Brown's a big guy, but like he put it between two defenders so only AJ could go up and get it. He just waltzed into the end zone. And he's done that several times this season. And I think that's the ascension of this offense. You can't stop them down the field. You can't really stop the run game once they get the quarterback run game going as well. So how do you beat them? You don't. And I think we're seeing that in the scores here. And I think another thing that I don't want to overlook, Lucha, that I promise I'll shut up about the Eagles. They don't play in a dome. They play in a cold stadium. So in the playoffs, it doesn't matter. They can travel anywhere, right? They don't care. They can go in any environment and play well. And so I think that helps them a ton.
Bird's looking good. Jalen Hurts, the favorite to win the MVP on most books right now. Could have got him at plus money a couple weeks ago. And we'll see how that shakes out for the betting board.
Yeah.
San Francisco taking care of business. Doesn't matter who's a quarterback right now. It seems like, anyway.
Yes.
The Bucks and Tom Brady getting absolutely exposed on the road, dominated.
But I think we knew this was coming. I think we knew this was coming, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was convincing. It was convincing. But the Niners got dinged up. Deebo Samuel, high ankle sprain. He's supposed to be back towards the end of the regular season. And apparently Brock Purdy is a name who we're talking about now, which I never thought we would be. Is day-to-day, though, and I guess he should be okay. And he's been playing well since he stepped in for Garoppolo. And I love everything the 49ers have done. They've assembled a defense. They've dug deep. You know, a bunch of guys that weren't high-profile, high draft-profile guys. Became really good pros in this system. Love the coaching staff, both sides of the football. Love what Shanahan does with the offense. Love the scheme. Doesn't matter who's at running back. Love how he's decided to use Deebo Samuel the last couple years. Got Brandon Ayuk out of the doghouse. They got on the same page, and he's been great. George Kittle, although the numbers haven't been there, his presence has been felt when he's healthy. And he got Garoppolo to play some pretty damn good football in this system before he went down. And now it's Brock Purdy, and we've just seen results. Everything in the 49ers organization, Chief, is working hand in hand, right? You have scouts doing their jobs, good coaching staff on both sides of the football, an organization willing to bring in all and any assets that they can to help out a quarterback or help out a team that has a window to win a championship. They go out and get Christian McCaffrey. I love that move for them, putting all the chips in the pot. And however it worked out that Jimmy Garoppolo stayed put for another season, maybe it was just meant to be for that little stopgap. And I feel terrible that he's playing such great football, and I hope he has a speedy recovery. And it's really cool to see an organization where everyone's on the same page, committed to winning reasonably. And I think the window will still be there next year. Whoever's behind center, the rest of that team is ready to win a championship. And my big takeaway is I think the Niners will compete regardless of who's behind center. I don't know who it would, God forbid, be after Brock Purdy, but they're managed the right way. They're coached the right way. They have depth pretty much everywhere. They play physical football. They're a tough out at home, too. And I can't say that maybe without Garoppolo, maybe they're going to upset Philly. But I think it's definitely plausible, or upset whoever they end up, you know, on a collision course with the first round or two. But I think San Fran's going to compete despite all this adversity and all the changes that they've had. And let's just see if Deebo has a speedy recovery here. I'm just so impressed with the 49ers. I know Tampa Bay is flawed right now, Chief, but it's still Tom Brady. It's still an NFL victory. There are far worse teams in this league than Tampa Bay, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, so Tampa Bay's, and here's what I'll say about Tampa Bay. If they win the division, they go to the playoffs. And I think, Luch, most likely they still win the division, right? Like, them losing to the 49ers this season, look, does Tom Brady hate it? Absolutely. Like, he does not enjoy losing. And I think we saw that in the press conference after the game. If you watch it, like, he said, look, man, we got our butts kicked in this league. You either kick butt or you get your butt kicked. And I mean, we got ours kicked pretty good today. Like, if you were able to watch that interaction with the media. But Tom's got to know, like, in his 40, at age 45, excuse me, they're not going to win some of these games, but they can still win the division. And I think that's where the Buccaneers come into play. Do they win the division? I think the answer is yes. Now, the tricky part is if they win the division, won't they see the Cowboys first at home?
What do you think about that?
See, now, this is where it gets tricky to me. Like, this is more tricky than anything else, because we can say whatever we want. If you don't jump on the Buccaneers early, like the San Francisco 49ers did, you're in trouble in the playoffs. Like, it can't be a 10-3 game in the fourth quarter for whoever has to go there. You get what I'm saying? Like, it can't be 10-3 in the fourth. If it is, like, you're in trouble of losing the game. It can't be 13-3. You get what I'm saying? Like, it's got to be 21-0 probably. Something. It's got to be a wide enough gap for them to just not get going so the pass rush can get off. If it's anything close, I think people are going to be in trouble. And that, to me, that's the scary part about Tampa Bay. It's not their team as a whole because they haven't played well. It's the experience of Tom Brady. Like, literally, that's what's winning them these games. And let me say this, too. You know, we can say whatever we want about Todd Bowles. Todd Bowles made I don't call it gutsy. He made a coaching call in not the game against San Francisco, but the previous game. Tom Brady wanted to go for it on fourth down. I think they call a timeout. He says, no, let's punt the ball, flip some field position. They get the ball back. They score. They get the ball back again. They score. Like, I don't want to overlook that coaching call where you've got the greatest quarterback of all time saying, no, let's keep going. And I think maybe the other team, I think they got a field goal. He says, no, we're going to trust our team to get it done. And even Tom talked about that, I think, in the previous press conference. Like, to me, that's mutual respect. And, you know, when you've got Tom, I feel like he has enough respect for Coach Bowles and Coach Leftwich, right? I think he's got enough respect for them. They respect him a ton. And come playoff time, that could be ugly if you've got to go to Tampa Bay for a game. Especially when you're a team like Dallas that's, like, done what you're supposed to do all season. Dallas is probably going to win 13 games, 12, 13 games, right? They've done what they're supposed to do, and then they still got to go first round and play Tom Brady. Unreal.
The Lions fans have been waiting. They've been waiting.
Well, wait a minute. Can you give me one more? And then I promise it's time for the Lions-Vikings debacle.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Give me one
more. I was going to say, but I have one more too. So let's go, Chief. Let's have it. Go ahead.
So I'm going back to Thursday night. I'm going to give you the Dolphins if that's the game you're going to. If not, cool.
That's my chess piece, yeah.
There you go. I felt like that was the case. I'm going back to Rams Raiders. Because remember, the theme for me this week is teams that have to have it, right? They got to have it. The Raiders had a meltdown here. And here's what I saw, because I did watch that game in totality, so I didn't have to go back and watch all 22s or anything like that. I was able to just kind of watch this one. What I saw from the Raiders, Luch, was a team that probably felt like they were going to win the game anyway. And they just did not take the Rams seriously. Because the Raiders should have scored at least 30 points in this game. There was no excuse for them to not put up points. And they just kind of lollygagged around the whole game. Just, oh, we got it. It's under control. And then they let Baker Mayfield fly to L.A., hop off a plane, check into a hotel, and learn plays on the fly and beat this team on a last-second touchdown, lose. And I think you've heard this now. If you haven't been able to tell, I like to watch the press conferences after the game. So I just like to hear what the players are thinking, what the coaches are thinking. And so on Thursday Night Football, Luch, they will interview the player of the game, which was Baker Mayfield at that time. Here's what Baker Mayfield had to say. This is the first thing he said, Luch, because they were saying, Baker, how does it feel? You know, you come in, Baker says, well, first of all, I was shocked that they gave me man coverage on the outside when we had to have a touchdown. Luch, whose fault is that? That's the coach's fault. What in the world? Luch, I'm not a football coach. I'm a basketball coach. I understand football, obviously. Okay, I'm a basketball coach. If my team is up 3, right, with 5 seconds left in a basketball game, and the other team is going to inbound the ball, there's one place I'm going to guard and take away. I'm taking away the three-point line. I will concede a two-pointer, not an easy one. I will concede that you get the ball in and that you're maybe able to get a two, a mid-range, a layup. I'll concede that it's 5 seconds, right? We just don't want any fouls. You get what I'm saying? But I'm not going to give you a three-pointer. I'm not doing that at all, okay? In football, if a team has to have a touchdown and there's 5 seconds left, Luch, wouldn't we just say, hey, defenders, everybody go, put your foot on the goal line, and you don't let them get inside. You just don't let them score a touchdown. Like, isn't that the thought process? I feel like that's the thought process. There was no prevent defense. I mean, they could have played quarters coverage and had enough. Like, I don't understand what the ideology was. They gave Van Jefferson press coverage, and they gave him a free release. And they end up losing this game, a team that was trying to ascend to get into the playoffs. This was a had-to-have-it layup game, and they blew it. The Raiders deserved to lose that game and not go into the playoffs after that performance. And even outside of the bad performance all game, press man coverage outside with no press, free release. What kind of idiotic coaching was that? Josh McDaniels needs to go back to being a coordinator. And yeah, I know he's not calling defensive plays, but come on, guy. Like, you've got to have better sense than that. All right, I'm off that train. Handing it back to you, Luke, because I know the Lions fans are desperate here.
That's Raiders football. I do have one other thing, but I can't let Miami off the hook because this was the road trip I've been circling. I've been wanting to see more, you know? And it's not like I don't think Miami's a good football team. And it's not like I don't think they're talented. And it's not like I don't think they can do damage in the playoffs. And by the way, you can still get decent odds on them. Every week after the loss, we're like, hey, you can still get them at 24-1 if you want them, you know?
Yeah.
But I haven't seen enough on the road trip that mattered. The good football teams, the good teams on the road, you're going to have to win on the road eventually. And I just didn't see it. It was bad. It was bad. The Dolphins and the Chargers, two teams that I'm just not very high on in terms of consistency. We've talked about the Chargers a lot in this podcast. And you know, we've talked a lot about the Miami Dolphins. And the Chargers are just oftentimes missing that component, missing some stability, They deal with the same injuries every year. I feel like Keenan Allen misses games. Mike Williams misses games. They miss games together. Austin Eckler probably misses a few. Herbert had the ribs thing earlier this year. Brandon Staley's super aggressive, and sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. Defensively, they're well coached, but seem to get beat on the outside a lot, and teams can run the football against them. But Miami could not do anything against them. Tua did not look good. The Miami offensive line got hustled. Another offensive line, observation from this week here. And but that's two games in a row where I'm not impressed. And I really like Mike McDaniel. Like, the guy's a stud coach, I think. He's brilliant.
Yeah, they're playing fine.
Yeah, they're fine. They're fine. And it wasn't like a one possession game. I get it. But I'm also not very high on the Chargers. That game didn't really do anything for me for either team because they're kind of just who I think they are. They are who I thought they were.
But playoffs? Here's what I will say. Here's what
playoffs.
Here's what I will say. What you saw from the Chargers was a team that wasn't going to take their foot off the gas. Like, they were up and they just kept throwing the football. They're like, nope, we're going to push it down the field. Now, here's what I will say also, Luke, because I did watch that game as well. And a lot of times when I'm watching games now, it's a multifaceted reason. I want to see how my props are doing. That's one reason. I want to see how teams are scheming up the others. I want to see that. And then I just want to see, like, the vibe of the team, right? Like, how are things going? What's the swag like? And I know that seems crazy in an analytical era that we're in, but Luke, here's what I saw in that game, and I don't want this to go unnoticed. I think at one point in the game, Tyreek Hill had been targeted 8 to 10 times, and he had 2 catches at one point in the game. Now, when you hear that, Luke, and I'm not asking this rhetorically, like, and I've got a point after your answer, but what do you, when you hear 8 to 10 targets, 2 catches for Tyreek Hill, what are you kind of your immediate thoughts there?
I don't know. I don't really have any.
Okay, that's cool.
My thoughts are, where's Jalen Waddle been on the road trip?
Okay, now let's talk through that. And that's what I was hoping you would think, like, well, how many targets did Jalen Waddle have with Tyreek at 10? At one point in this game, Jalen Waddle had 1 target and Tyreek Hill had like 10 targets. At one point in this game. And I'm going back and I'm saying, well, I feel like Coach Mike, let's call him Coach Mike, not Mike Tomlin. Let's call him Coach McDaniels. I don't feel like he made good adjustments early on. Here's why I say that, Luke. The scheme they were running plays 20 yards down the field. Luke, I feel like they got away from the short passing game, the quick strikes, stuff to keep the defense off balance. Everything was slow and long developing early on in this game. I mean, deep 20-yard in routes, Luke. You know, post, just crazy play calling to me. When you've got 2 guys that you literally probably run a shallow cross every 3 plays and get first downs. Do you get what I'm saying here? I felt like there was no imagination in the first half of this game. And then you went into the second half and we saw a lot of the same. I just felt like the play calling just wasn't good enough to get this team where they needed to be. Now, was Tua under duress some? Yes. Did he need to play better? Yes. But play calling has a big effect on how a quarterback can settle into a game. And I don't think Tua had a chance to settle in at all because everything felt like 5-step drop, slow, long, developing plays. Like, we got to be better than that, coach. You know what I mean? Throw a wide receiver screen. Throw some slants. You have to be better than that. Like, and if you don't get it, but if you're able to go back and watch this film, Luke, you'll see what I'm saying. Too many deep balls, too many long developing plays, short passing game, intermediate passing game, get your run game going. And I don't think they did that, and that was their problem with the Chargers this past week.
It's a weird comparison or like observation that I'm about to make, but we kind of saw Tyreek Hill is a God-given talent in this league. On the field, say what you want about whatever his issues were off the field, etc. We're talking football, strictly football. There's really been nobody like him in this league. He's a weapon. He's the ultimate weapon. He's in the MVP conversation. He's not going to win it just because it's going to go to a quarterback. But like,
yeah.
But like, we saw Mahomes kind of have to figure it out with who he had. I mean, he had Travis Kelce, who's the ultimate chain mover. But Mahomes got – I don't want to say Mahomes and, of course, Andy Reid. We know how Andy Reid likes to call plays. I feel like at one point of their tenure together, they kind of got addicted to the long-developing home run plays multiple times a drive. And they kind of hit their lull a little bit until we saw the development or the willingness to kind of take those checkdowns and those 5-6 yard passing plays. And – I don't know who that's going to be in the Miami offense, but it should be Big Mike Gesicki. This guy should be involved, and I'm kind of disappointed that he's not more. This guy should, you know, he's athletic, he's big, he should win you balls in the middle of the field. And I think it's going to be just simply, let's take what the offense is going to give us a little, or the defense is going to give us a little bit more, just from watching how the Chargers played, you know, these two brilliant receivers and what the Dolphins wanted to do. And they took away the middle of the field. I mean, you, it was like the only thing the telecast ever said that was pretty intelligent was they literally were playing a lot of coverage. It took away these crossing routes when you have two receivers that are fast and gifted and get open like Waddle and Tyreek, and that's what they like to do. And I think it could be something as simple as let's take these 4 to 5 yard plays and get into down and, you know, good down and distance situations, because you're not always going to be able to get that home run ball.
That's it. Like, that's literally it. They started running the ball in the second half, got themselves into some more positive down and distance situations, and you saw a slightly different offense. But, like, imagine if they did that in the first half. We might be talking about Miami winning this game. I mean, they lost 23-17.
Right.
And that's right. Because they had to kick a field goal late because they played so poorly in the first half. Like, it was terrible. And they almost got the onside kick. Like, they did almost, it was so close. And, I mean,
that's, man, the Chargers, Chief. The Chargers always put themselves in a one-score game. They never take their foot off their gas because they can't, because they don't run the football. They literally cannot ever not take their foot off the gas, and half the time, and like 40% of the time it benefits them, and 60% of the time it kills them that they just can't run between the tackles at all. That's who they are. I will say this, Justin Herbert played – that was his best football game season, though, I think, in terms of mobility and creating throws and not making any mistakes. But I think Miami and the Chargers, and this is, like, probably a very unpopular take, but I think they are a tier ahead of teams like Seattle and Tennessee. But the Chargers specifically, I just cannot buy into. Miami has the ceiling, and I've been talking about putting futures on them for 3 weeks now, and I just think it's incredible value. But they have some things they need to figure out for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
one more quick thing. I swear, and then it's Lions time. Look at us, just like it's like we're a bad couple avoiding the conflict we need to talk about. we're sweeping it under the rug as long as we can. And maybe we'll just get through the show and just not talk about it, but people will come to our heads.
Yeah.
But you just absolutely – what a massacre and heartbreaker of a football game between New England and Arizona. And you just hate to see the non-contact injury with Kyler.
Oh, man. And three plays in too. Like,
and I, you know, he's voiced his displeasure a lot. We've seen it on TV. A lot of the talking heads are making a big deal. Oh, is Kyler Murray immature and blah, blah, blah. This guy's just emotional and wants to freaking win football games, I think. And, you know, he never had his full complementary of weapons. He never did. He never had Hopkins, Hollywood, Ertz, Rondell, and Connor at the same time. And that's a really nice-looking offense on paper. And I was really looking forward to, you know, I hope he has a speedy recovery. But, you know, we'll have to see the severity of the injury. If this thing, you know, if he's not ready by camp and people are already calling for Cliff's head and he really has made some pretty poor choices. And he hasn't won a challenge since 2020 when he took over, by the way. Did you hear that statistic? So I don't know if he knows how to coach. And I just feel like there might be some decisions that are going to have to be made in this organization. And I just feel like it was a really unfortunate, it's just nothing good. Like, that was just really sad. And, you know, so many injuries in that game last night, Chief.
Yeah, man. On both sides, too. That's a tough one. You know, hopefully he'll be okay. I think we see some changes in Arizona. If not, I think Cliff Kingsbury, in my opinion, I think because of the injuries, they may give him a pass. I think he may have one more season to get this right. Because we have seen them win games. This season, though, like you talked about, I mean, God, half your offense of your key players were out. Now, Hopkins more for suspension, I think, than the others. But, like, I mean, what can you do? You try to tread water until those guys get back, and now your star quarterback is hurt. So, I think – now, I could be wrong here. I think they give Cliff Kingsbury one more season to figure it out. And then after that, I think he's done. If they don't win football games with a mostly healthy football team all season.
All right. Here we go.
So I'll kick this off because myself, the commish, we came on the National Roto Grinders Podcast Network and pumped up the Vikings. And talked about the fact that what was Vegas doing? What were the line makers doing? What were they thinking? And lo and behold, the Detroit Lions at home put a pretty good spanking on the Vikings. I mean, Justin Jefferson was able to get off like we anticipated. But once again, the Lions digging themselves out of an early grave here. And put on a performance for the ages. Now, Luce, if you would have told me, without knowing the score, that Kirk Cousins threw for 425 yards, 2 touchdowns, and no interceptions, I would have said, oh, the Vikings must have won this game 35-3. Okay? But then you go to the other side. Jared Goff, 330-3. And the crazy part, spread the ball around tremendously. Like, if you would have heard that, you would have thought Amon-Ra St. Brown had 120 yards receiving. He had 68 yards receiving in this game. 6 for 68. DJ Chark, 6 for 94 in a touchdown. Josh Reynolds, 5 for 51 in a touchdown. Jameson Williams, 1 big play, 1 for 41 in a touchdown. Khalif Raymond, 2 for 19. DeAndre Swift, 3 for 18. Shane Zylstra, of all people, 2 for 18. Justin Jackson, 1 for 12. Penny Sewell, 1 for 9. And the run game basically did nothing. We had Jamal Williams at 16 carries for 37 yards. DeAndre Swift, 6 for 21. Justin Jackson, 4 for 19. Goff took off once. And Amon-Ra St. Brown had 1 carry for 6 yards. But the Vikings, I mean, the Lions got it done. And they are pulling themselves into the playoffs, Luke. Like, the Lions have a shot to go to the playoffs. I just want that to sink in for people. They got a shot to go to the playoffs. And for everything we've said about this team, and, you know, we've seen Dan Campbell say some weird things on national television. He's got this team inspired to play. And this offense is playing pretty well. I heard another analyst talk about this, Luke. Okay, so the Lions have a ton of draft picks coming up, by the way. A ton. And, do you draft a quarterback? Like, who wants to get rid of Jared Goff right now in this offense? He's been playing fine. Like, why do you go out and get an unproven rookie? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's very interesting to see Jared Goff do this with these weapons, because he's got weapons. He may have more weapons now than he did when he was in with the Rams.
But the sky was falling when they gave away TJ Hawkinson, who they beat, by the way.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, they have the pieces. Now, are they going to win a Super Bowl? No. But one of the things that I can say about this team is they don't have a problem scoring points. You get what I'm saying? This team can put up points. And when you can do that in the NFL, Luch, you've got a shot. Like, you have a shot when you can score points in the NFL. And here's what I'm saying. Now, have they had some rough games? Yes. But, Luch, remember we talked about in the NFL, a lot of games are close, right? Listen to the Lions' offensive production, even in losses. They lost to the Eagles 38-35, Luch. 38-35. Beat the Commanders 36-27. Lost to the Vikings 28-24. Lost to the Seahawks 8-45. Now the Patriots put a spanking on them. It was 29-0. Lost to the Cowboys 24-6. Okay. Dolphins beat them 31-27. They beat the Packers 15-9. They beat the Bears 31-30. They beat the Giants 31-18. They lost to the Bills 28-25. They beat the Jaguars 40-14, and they just beat the Vikings 34-23. Luke, this team can score points. It's incredible, really. Now, do I think they should have beat the Vikings? No, but they did. And now they get a matchup with the Jets, Panthers, Lions, and Packers. How many of these games do you think they win?
Three. Just because it's the NFL.
I think they win three as well. But here's the tricky part. The Panthers defense may give them some problems. That's the game to me that they probably have to win. Because the Jets, their defense is good too. But like, I feel like the Panthers is a different style of play. They just can't put up enough points to hang with them. So the defense is going to have to be flawless. And they're going to come out with their hair on fire. Right? You get what I'm saying? They should beat the Bears. They should beat the Packers. And if they did that, they'd be a what? 9-8. They'd be an 8-9 football team if they won two. They'd be 9-8 if they won three of the last four games. They'd be over 500 and looking like a wild card playoff team. And that's very interesting considering where we are in the season.
So shout out to TJ, our guy TJ, who went on Crunch Time and he did this whole thing where give me 150 likes or whatever on the video, I'll give you my logo and tournament play. And, you know, there's probably people thinking, oh, this guy just wants the likes or whatever. He got on here and said, you got to play Jameson Williams. He got on Crunch Time and said, it's not St. Brown, it's Jameson Williams. Lo and behold, first quarter, Jameson Williams has arrived. 4,400 receiver on FanDuel or whatever his price was. Close to the minimum, if not. And tell you what, that's some serious value. So big shout out to TJ, who was on Detroit, the right side of Detroit. And that was an awesome, awesome conviction call there. But,
well, I mean, yeah, if you stacked this game the right way, you came out all right. Like, if you played Justin Jefferson in golf, you know, you were pretty good. And the other guys didn't kill you. I will say for DFS, where I messed up this week was I played Philip Dorsett, and man, he didn't do anything. But they had another guy that had like 9 for 91, Mr. Moore. My gosh. Could have easily played Chris Moore, but I did not. And that kind of cost me this week, but it is what it is.
Let me just say this. Perhaps why not everyone could buy into a team like Dallas. They're 4-1 in one score, one possession games, which is great. They're finding ways to win, and they're closing out games the right way. They're on the right side of a little bit of variance, or one or two calls, or one or two plays, and that's fine. The Minnesota Vikings are 9-0 in one possession games. However you want to look at that, it just wows you. First of all, how many one possession games can you win without losing in the NFL? I would say out of 10, you're losing at least 3 typically in this league.
Well, yeah, I mean that's positive variance, but once again, it's not how.
I know.
What does the record say?
And I know Detroit won by 9. It wasn't one possession, but like these games have been freaking close, man. Like almost all of them. So,
well, okay. Last thing about the Vikings, and then I know we'll look ahead here. The Vikings have the Colts on Saturday. Do you think they lose that game? No. They're at home. I know, man. No, I don't see it.
I don't see it, but I mean, Indy is fresh, coming off a bye, so that's.
I got you, but I don't want to diminish. Like the Vikings are still very talented. Like they lost to the Lions, and I think losing to the Lions is like, oh, but we've seen the Lions can put up points on anybody. It's Minnesota, whether or not they can finish the game.
According to our 2022 history, Minnesota will win by 8 or less. That's my take.
Okay. Well, no matter how you slice it, I'm not expecting them to lose to the Colts. Okay? So they'll be – and here's what I'm saying too, Luke. Like, I think because people don't like the Vikings because of how they've won games, we just want to write them off as not being as good as their record says they are. But we can say the same thing about the Cowboys.
And we should.
You get what I'm saying? I'm saying if we want to go that route, we could say that pretty much about almost every team in the league.
Yeah, that's true.
That's my point. So they've won 10 games. And
nobody's good except the Eagles. The only good team is the Eagles.
But the Eagles have had close spots too. Like recently. So here's what we're going to do with the Eagles, right? And see, this is where your good friendly neighborhood chief has to come in and right the ship for not only ESPN, not only Fox Sports, but the whole sports community. I thought we were about to move on, but now we've got to go back. Now, did the Eagles put a stomping on the Giants? They absolutely did. They're 12-1. They are 12-1. Luke, here's my point now. Because remember, and we've talked about this. The Eagles beat the Lions 38-35. How many points was that? 3.
A lot.
Now, they beat the Vikings 24-7. They beat the Commanders early 24-8. They beat the Jaguars 29-21. They beat the Cardinals 20-17. Cowboys 26-17. Steelers 35-13. Texans 29-17. Lost to the Commanders 32-21. Beat the Colts 17-16, beat the Packers 40-33, spanked the Titans, and they spanked the Giants. But here's what I'm saying. We can go and look at the Cowboys who have similar things happen. They beat some teams by 3, some teams by 5, some teams by 20, right? So the Eagles happen to be on the positive side of some variance. They were about to head into overtime against the Cardinals. The guy missed the field goal. Matt Prater misses a field goal, and they don't go into overtime. So my point is, while the Eagles are 12-1, and your record is what you are, what your record says you are, do the Eagles have the juice? Absolutely. But we're not writing off their record because they've won some close games. Like, it's like those games don't exist, right? So the Eagles are 12-1 and their close games don't exist, but the Vikings are 10-3 and every close game exists. You see how that's like unfair comparisons. That's the point I'm trying to make here. Like, I'm not writing off the Vikings because they lost to the Lions. Like, they've still got a fairly favorable schedule to win four more football games. It's running through there anyway. Like, you're going to have to go to Minnesota to play because they're going to win their division, period. All right, I'm done.
Good. That was a good spiel. I liked it. Look ahead. Let's do it.
I think there's a big game this week. 49ers at Seattle.
Right off the rip on Thursday night.
This is a trap game, Luch. I'm telling you right now. This is a trap game. Short week. We've seen this every season. Short week. One of these stupid games.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
And let me say this. Seattle might win this game. Debo's not playing. We'll see what happens with Purdy. Short week at home. 49ers could trip up here. Seattle wins this game.
I would disagree, but not by a one score margin. I'm not saying, wow, that was the worst take ever, Chief. I'm on the Niners, but a lot of question marks. You're right. A lot of question marks on a very short week on the road. You know, 12th man's going to be livid, right? They're going to be making some noise. Tough atmosphere to play in. Purdy's not 100%. I still cannot believe we're talking about Brock Purdy on this podcast, but he's been playing good football. Absolutely. The Ravens are dealing with a wealth of injuries as usual. 3-point road dogs against Cleveland. Deshaun Watson played better football. Who do you think wins this football game?
Oh, boy. And look, let me say this. Gosh, I hate when I'm right, but I'm wrong on my props. So I said this, I think, the first week. Like, Deshaun Watson comes out rusty, but typically once you get that second week of practice in, you look a lot better. And what happened? He looked a lot better. Now, he didn't play well in the first half, but we saw the yardage pick up. This week, he's probably going to look even better than he did last week. And all of a sudden, the Browns are going to have some stuff here. No Lamar Jackson, I don't think. I think I'm going to give this game to the Browns at home. Tough division game, but if Deshaun is getting better and the D can play serviceably, they win this game because they will have a more explosive offense than the Ravens on Sunday. That I can guarantee you.
Okay. Is it redemption time for Miami? 7.5-point road dogs at Buffalo. We could see some significant weather in this game. I'm not sure what the weather's going to call for. I'll let you, you know, give your take on here. I think this is a tough spot for Miami, and for me, it's the Bills.
I don't want to give up on Miami yet, but they're on the road. Here's what I've seen, though, over the past few weeks. The Bills haven't put teams away, and that's the scary part for me with Miami. If you don't put this team away, they've got a chance. And we haven't seen it them look good the past couple weeks. If there was any team I felt more confident in them probably losing to, it was the 49ers. I expect them to go there and try to win and put some pressure on them, but the 49ers defense, man, they're incredible now. They had a shot against the Chargers. Hopefully Coach McDaniel can make some adjustments and get his play calling back on track. I'm going with the Bills at home, but I don't feel good about it, to be honest with you. I do think Miami is explosive enough to make the Bills pay if they don't put them away early.
Possible snow, possible rain, possible wind. My issue in this one would be Miami doesn't have a run game. They don't know how to run the football. They can't commit to running the football. And the Bills have definitely shown some willingness to run the ball more the last 6 to 8 weeks. Getting little brother Cook into the mix, which is good to see. If it's ugly, I say Miami covers 7.5, but they lose the game. That's my ultimate take here, and I'm pretty confident in that prediction, actually.
Yeah.
Give me another game you want to talk about. I mean, the Lions are playing the Jets this week in technically New Jersey. So what are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting game because these are two teams that are making an attempt to ascend into playoff consistently. Now, the Lions haven't been a playoff team consistently, and neither have the Jets. But I think this is what they're attempting to do. Have a culture shift. Let's start getting into the playoffs consistently. If we saw Mike White take some big shots a big shot for sure on Sunday, Joe Flacco had to come in for a little bit. Hopefully Mike White is okay. Do you think the Jets can put up enough points to hang? They're at home. But I'm going to go with the hot Lions here. I'm going for the upset. Lions over the Jets, which means the Jets are absolutely going to win this game.
Chief trying to win back some listeners this week.
Well, it's the points, though, man. Like, Minnesota, I felt like, could put up enough points, right? And they can. Can the Jets put up enough points to hang is the question.
I think so. I cannot pick a winner in this game. I cannot pick a winner in this game, but I hope it's the Jets because I'm probably starting Mike White in fantasy. By the way, yeah. It's playoff week. So I think I'm going to watch this game like in its entirety.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. This should be a fun one as long as everything comes to fruition. I've got a game that I want to discuss that I think is another trap game. And you tell me how you feel about it. I'm telling you, and we've seen this before. The Bengals are going to Tampa Bay. Tom's coming off a beatdown. We're on to Cincinnati. Now, I know that was the Bill Belichick phrase, but my point is, and it's not about the Bengals, it's about where I feel like the mindset of this team will be. Now, are the Buccaneers a good football team? No. Are they a bad football team? No. They're below Tom Brady standards, but this is an average football team. You get what I'm saying? Like, they're not the best. They're not the worst. They're probably somewhere in the middle at the end of it all. I think this is a trap game for the Bengals. Now, are the Bengals a better football team? I definitely think so. But I think this is a trap game for the Bengals. I see the Buccaneers squeezing this out on another Tom Brady heroic last second drive here?
No, not for me. I think it'll be a competitive game. I'm in on the Bengals. I'm in on the Bengals winning this football game.
No. I'm saying the Buccaneers could. Because of how they've been playing, they've been on a roll. They beat the Chiefs. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a weird spot in the season for them at 9-4 going on the road to play the Bucs, who haven't been great but are coming off one of their worst losses of the season. Like, you get what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, man. And here's something else I'm looking at, too. Bengals on the road haven't been Bengals at home. Let me give it to you. And I know this was a little earlier. At the Cowboys, 17-20. At the Jets, 27-12, but that was early in the season. At the Ravens, lost 19-17. At the Saints, won 30-26. At the Browns, lost 32-13. At the Steelers, 37-30. At the Titans, 20-16. You see, like, they have not been the same on the road. They've won, but there's room, there's wiggle room in there. And I'm just saying, they're coming off two home games, and now they're going back on the road to play the Bucs, and it could be a trap game for them. That's really all I'm saying.
I agree. Chargers Titans, 425. Chargers favored by 3. And here's what I'm gonna say: if the Titans don't get Christian Fulton back, that secondary is a mess. If they don't get Danico Autry back, the pass rush still won't be there. They've had 3 sacks in the last 3 games before Danico Autry went down and Jeff Simmons has been playing on one leg. What do the Chargers do? They pass the football. They don't run the football. This is probably my favorite. Like, I don't know how much ownership the Chargers are going to garner. It's early in the week. Maybe it's an emotional head chair, but I think Herbert is going to carve up Tennessee. On the flip side, you know, from pounding props and playing a little bit of DFS this year, the Chargers cannot stop the run. As good as that pass rush is, I think the Titans can win some early downs on the run. So I'm interested to see two conflicts of style here, right? Like, teams have been gashing the Chargers all year on the ground. Tennessee's going to try to do it regardless. And the Tennessee's been getting hit in the pass game pretty heavily lately. I'm taking the Chargers. I'm taking them over Tennessee. And I kind of like this game for DFS purposes here. Like, Tennessee hasn't been lighting up the scoreboard, but I think Henry scores. Probably has 80, 90 yards on the ground. A couple catches.
Yeah.
Big game. Big game for Mike Williams this week. That's 2 touchdown Mike Williams break the slate this week. That's my call. And it kind of pains me saying it against my boys here. But I'm unbiased, and this is a bad matchup for Tennessee, in my opinion, defensively.
Yeah. No, I get it for sure. I get it for sure. Another trap game on the horizon, Cowboys-Jaguars.
Oh, baby.
Another baby. One of those weird – I'm telling you, it's trap week, bro. It's trap week. This is going to be interesting for the Cowboys this week. Do I feel like they should handle the Jaguars in a general sense? I do. But man, it's
Jaguars are getting 4.5 at home, and it opened at 6. If 6 was dangling in my face, I'd say give me the Jags. 4.5's tough, a little tougher. Playing at home, not inside, not in Jerry's world. Man, do I kind of like the Jaguars? And as a Titans fan, I'm really hoping. That Dallas gets this W, but from a betting perspective, I like the Jags with the 10. I'm not just drinking the sauce that they, thump Tennessee. I mean, they've been playing competitive football for longer than some people want to give them credit for. It's going to be a one possession game. I think Vegas has this right. Give me the Jags with the points. Give me the Jags with the points. If anybody calls me biased after listening to this podcast, Chief, you're listening to the wrong guy.
Yeah, man.
What's your take? Who do you take?
I'm going to take the Cowboys. I still think it's a trap game. Like, they may come out flat and have to rally late. We'll see. I'm taking the Cowboys, though. Not the points. I'm just taking them to win straight up.
Listen, it's playoff week in most competent fantasy leagues, so good luck to everybody that's playing season long. And it's a war of nutrition. If you have avoided a lot of injuries, you might be in decent shape, even if you didn't have the best roster on paper 2 weeks ago and you got in. So let me ask you this. I'm surveying some names that are in some of the waiver wires that I've been seeing and seeing people post about. I looked in a couple of leagues my own. Well, let me ask you this. You're desperate for quarterback. Maybe you had Lamar or Huntley or whatever your situation is, or Garoppolo. I don't know. Right. But there are definitely some fantasy football owners who are maybe looking to get a quarterback this week. Let's say Mike White, Daniel Jones, and Jared Goff are all available. Mike White has Detroit, Daniel Jones at Washington, Jared Goff at the Jets. And you know what? I'll even throw Tom Brady in there because some people ditch Tom Brady. So you like Goff against Detroit?
Yeah, I guess the Jets. Yeah, give me Goff. Yeah. This offense, I mean, he's got the weapons, man. Like throwing Jameson Williams into the mix, having DeAndre Swift to be able to catch passes, mix in Jamal Williams in the run game, Amon-Ra St. Brown on the outside. Like, give me Goff. I feel like he's got a more complete complement of good weapons. And this offense, as we talked about, can put up points.
That's just such a fascinating game for so many purposes because, A, we're going to find a lot out about the Jets and the Lions. B, you know a ton of people are streaming Mike White and Jared Goff in the playoffs, in the fantasy football playoffs this week as well. And I think I'm kind of partial to Mike White. I mean, yeah, we're crapping on the Vikings here. They couldn't establish the run, but Kirk Cousins still had a very efficient mega game through the air. So I can't discount that. And, yeah, the Lions defense has looked better in the second half, but I think I'm on the Mike White side there, but I don't hate the Goff take.
And don't look now, Tyron Smith is coming back this week. That's a Cowboys take, but that's a big deal.
Yeah, that really is just a massive upgrade. So my other question is, looking at wide receiver, you're super desperate, right? Mm-hmm. You have Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Elijah Moore, Jameson Williams, Jahan Dotson. Am I missing anybody? Hold on.
Jameson Williams. I'm not taking Jahan Dotson. Elijah Moore I don't hate, but I think it's Jameson Williams.
Are you out on Sky Moore now? You know, he had like too many.
I was never in on Sky Moore, what it's worth. Like, they spread the ball around too much. He was never going to be consistently impactful for any type of fantasy. Look, I'll put it to you like this. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and I know this was about Sky Moore, came in at a reception prop of 3 this week. I took the under. I won.
Let me ask you this. DJ Chark or Jameson Williams, pick one for this week if you need one.
Now it's getting interesting. I think I roll with long-term Chark. I think I roll with Chark here. I feel like he's still going to get more targets, but could be Jameson. I think I take Chark, though, for what it's worth. Either could be the right answer because we got to think Sauce Gardner is going to be lined up on Amon-Ra St. Brown.
What's the deal with Chuba Hubbard and Deontay Foreman? Have the game scripts been good where they can split all this crazy volume? Are you nervous to use one of these Panthers running backs?
Would you? That's how they want to play. And, I mean, they play the Steelers this week, don't they? Yeah. They're at home. Either one may be viable. I still like Foreman better. I feel like he's got more goal line work, but I mean, it was pretty. It was a pretty good split this week. So, you know, we'll see.
I guess it's also definitely worth monitoring the Patriots situation. Damian Harris didn't play. We'll have to see like how much he practices. It's worth trying to take a dart throw at one of these Patriots running backs, I think, if they're on the waiver wire and like you want to see how it unfolds. Damian Harris, you know, we saw Pierre Strong and we saw Kevin Harris. I don't know what my lean would be. I guess between Harris and Strong, maybe Strong by a nose, but America's scrapping the waiver wire here, baby, for fantasy football playoff week. We are dealing with a lot of injuries here, and that's that. So good luck to everybody in your season-long leagues. Hey, GPP food of the day / story time. Tell me something good, Chief. Tell me something good.
So I must say, hear me out here, folks. This is a GPP food of the day / story time. If you're not busy over the holidays and like too caught up in the hustle and bustle, like I know you have gifts to buy and stuff like that, man, go volunteer at your local food bank. You know, my church happens to have one, so I kind of get to do it year round. But what I will say, man, is, you know, as fortunate as we are, you know, when you think about things, like some people just aren't as fortunate, bro. And you'd be surprised what a care package of bread, canned goods, you know, sometimes we have fruit, eggs. You'd just be surprised what a little care package like that could do to brighten up someone's day. And the food pantry appreciates it. They always need volunteers. So GPP food of the day, man, you know, if you can, go visit a local food pantry and tier for an hour. It could definitely change your life, man. Like, everybody doesn't have it as good as the next person. And, you know, being able to assist in providing help for someone that's really in need. Like, just think about the magnitude of this, Luch. When someone comes to the food bank, they're basically saying, hey, I don't have enough food to, like, take care of my family. So it takes guts. It takes pride to put that aside and say, hey, I've got to get down. Like, we need help. We don't have food to eat. Like, that's a basic necessity of living. It's food. And so, once again, if you could get to your local food bank or food pantry, just give them an hour. It's that hour will be well spent.
Depending on how long people have been listening to us, I used to be a reporter for a newspaper, a pretty local joint for a really long time, actually. So I got to know a lot of rural towns and, you know, dealt with food banks and churches and, you know, around the holidays. And it was another way I was able to contribute was, you know, I was happy to write as many stories and articles and whatever I could do to spread awareness about that kind of stuff. But there are so many ways to donate during the holidays. You know, if you're not involved with a food bank, you know, Christmas time and giving gifts. And, you know, like you said, up here, there's a bunch of stuff that they call the angel tree where you can anonymously donate gifts to nonprofits that host these, I don't know what, giveaways or programs, you know, where families can sign up, you know, to have some gifts to give in the holidays. And you see a lot of local businesses get involved and individuals, and that's really cool. There's just, you know, so many ways to donate and give back this time of the year. So it's really cool to see. I can't believe we are getting insanely close to the new year already, Chief. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, for sure.
Pretty crazy.
For sure.
And we're not stopping though. We got food for thought coming at you full throttle. I will tell you this, I had a pretty busy weekend, and I went to Hershey Park in PA with my girlfriend, and she showed me a lot of spots that she typically goes with her family every year, and that was pretty cool, you know. Ate at a really nice restaurant, but we also stopped at a really, really cool brewery. And if you're from Pennsylvania, central Pennsylvania, or eastern Pennsylvania, you probably know Trogues if you drink beer. And it was one of the coolest environments I've been in terms of breweries or wineries. We took a tour, we saw the whole process, you know, from beginning to end, you know, what it takes to actually to make the beer and where they put it and their whole the whole establishment they have back there. And it was really cool. And they had really awesome food there. So if you're in central PA, check out Trogues Brewery. The beer was really good. Got hooked up at the end of it. And my girlfriend doesn't really drink beer, so I drank two people's worth of samples. So I was feeling pretty good by the end of it. But Hershey's also where they have the high school state wrestling championships. And this is the first year that they didn't have the PIAA high school football championships. But Hershey is secretly a little mecca of high school sports in the middle of Pennsylvania. So people think of the amusement park there and the chocolate where the chocolate's made, you know, Hershey chocolate, but really it's a hidden gem for high school sports. You know, if you're a kid growing up in Pennsylvania and you're a wrestler or you play football, you know, that was always your goal to get at Hershey in December and play football there. So it's a cool little town and there's definitely some cool stuff there and, you know, a really cool brewery. And I got to say this, by the way, I woke up today. I got a good morning text from my girlfriend, right? And we stopped at the sports book at the casino by her house over the weekend. And I introduced her to what a kiosk was to put bets in. So I woke up today and she said, good morning. We lost our parlay. And I never expected that. And
classic. And
so find someone that will take interest in your hobbies a little bit, even when you don't expect it. And I thought that was pretty funny. So I know she's listening. So Taylor, I'm glad you're a little bit invested with me here. And it's
cool. Listen, that's a classic, bro. That's an instant classic. And we've like run way over time on this show today. So thank you all for listening. But listen, good morning. We lost our parlay. That's the show title.
Find you a significant other that will grieve in losses with you and
oh my goodness
and smile for joy when you win them. But that made me laugh. That made me smile. So. But thanks, Taylor. You're the best. And it was cool drinking your beer at Trobes. So thanks for letting me catch a buzz. Anyway, we'll be back. We'll be back next week for another episode. I can't wait to run it back and watch the Lions Jets this week. Chief, I know we have a bunch of content to keep pumping out this week at Roto Grinders and Scores Nas and the whole nine yards. So if you've never listened to us for some reason, where can the people find you on Twitter?
You can find me at ChiefJustice06, and that's on the Twitter sphere. And just come hang out in the Chiefs Prop Shop Discord, and I'm in there most of the day.
At the J. Carlucci, look me up. We got to get out of here. We'll be back next week. For the Chief, I'm the Looch. Have a good week, everybody, and good luck.